Mr. Smith Talks Triathlon, Episode 40, Key Triathlon Equipment. Mr. Smith Talks Triathlon, practical triathlon advice for everyday athletes. If you've got all the gear, at least have an idea.
Fantastic. That's our podcast for today, really, isn't it?
Yeah, get the gear, have an idea.
Yeah.
And how are you?
There's lots of gear you can get, isn't there?
Legal gear we're talking about. It's good to see you again, Gerard. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you for coming back, Doug. Always appreciate having the fun stuff here as well as me.
There will be a day that I don't come back. Yeah. But let's not worry about that one or even think about it. Good to see you again. You are Gerard, the coach.
Yep. And you are Doug, the... I still haven't got... You're the assistant coach. You filled in for me while I was away on the weekend.
The assistant coach, yeah. I may have been sacked already after one poor performance, but...
And Miranda have you've been elevated to Miranda's status now.
I'm not even sure how to take that, but complimentary, clearly.
Absolutely.
Clearly complimentary. Let's move on before I get myself in trouble. So we're here. You're the coach, as we said. I help fill in the gaps, and we do podcasts about stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And today we're going to do one about all that gear and paraphernalia that you may or may not need for triathlon.
And I think that's important because some of it you do need, some of it you don't, some of it's optional. Lots of stuff to talk about.
Fantastic. Before that, the team. You do coach a team of people. What is going on?
Well, here in Wellington, the team had a park run. We do a park run on a regular basis just to measure running performance. And there's a few people popped out with quite nice PBs on the day, Doug. Congratulations to you as one of them.
Thank you.
No, it's great to see because you've been chipping away at this, at the training, at the running, at the nutrition, everything else. And so it's fantastic to see it coming together. And that's why we do these things. That's why we put ourselves through the pain of measuring through a really tough time trial.
Yeah,
but so that you can see and sit back and go, hey, this is great.
Yeah, and we talked about it a while back, that doing the TTs and trying to embrace them, and I embraced it as much as I could.
Yeah.
And Wellington put on a magnificent day, so it was just perfect conditions. And yeah, it's nice to see. It gives you a very quick snapshot as to whether the training's working or not.
Yeah.
So yeah, very, very pleased. And there were certainly a few others who put in great performances as well. So done, coach.
Congratulations, everyone.
Superb.
Right, number two is this week is the 70.3 World Champs coming up in Nice. And we've got two team members over there, Briar and Claire. So Briar has been on the ground checking everything out and having a blast, learning about the huge hills on the bike course and the heat on the run and everything else. But yeah, look, they've been training through winter for this. Arrived over there, stinking hot, bit of adaptation to do. But yeah, want to just say all the best to both of you for that. You've trained hard for it, so go enjoy the victory.
It sounds like not the worst place to do a half Ironman, although are the hills brutal?
It's a really tough bike course and then a really hot run. So nothing easy about it, but geez, it'll be satisfying.
Yeah, fantastic. Go well, go well.
All right, and it's also the start of September. The year is ticking along. So we're getting to that point in the year where for people doing half Ironman events in December, you really want to be feeling like things are stepping up and you're getting a bit more, I won't say serious, but perhaps diligent about the training. The mindset we wanted earlier was to keep it relatively low-key, tick it over, get it done, don't get too wrapped up on it.
Yep.
But now we're just kind of slowly working our way up. But for those doing Ironman, just recognise we're still 6 months away from Ironman. There's a lot of training and some very big training to come later on in the year, Christmas time onwards.
Yeah.
So don't wind yourself up and get too excited too early.
Yeah, and we've talked about that balance a lot, but and about taking everything in the right perspective. And if you miss a session, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
But it is a time with those events coming up, particularly the halves and sort of that December, January timeframe, to just, yeah, if you think you're going to skip something, think a little bit harder about it before you make that decision.
Yeah.
So yeah, I know it's hard to use the right phrase, but yeah, let's get serious. Just be a little bit more diligent about what you're doing.
Nice. All right.
Speaking of diligence, I actually don't even know that's a rubbish segue. But last time we talked about patience.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
about, you know, there's no such thing as the magic workout. And it's about just things will happen eventually.
Yeah.
As long as you're patient.
Yeah. And you've got to, you've got to have, I guess, some trust in, for those who are on my plans as and me as a coach and the approach for anyone else the same. Trust and belief that you shouldn't expect to be faster noticeably day by day, week by week. Okay, you're on a course to get you to peak at a certain time. So patience as you work through it, and as you get closer, then ideally you feel and you see the benefits of everything you've done at that stage.
Yep. And it is it's a hard thing because you put in all this effort and you maybe expect a magic result. Mm-hmm. And there'll be people who did the park run who didn't do a PB or didn't go as fast. And I know we don't set time goals, but unfortunately in a TT run event, there's kind of no other measure.
Yeah, because you know what your last one was as well. Yeah.
Exactly. And hey, if you didn't set a PB or you weren't happy with your time, you might get a little bit, is this training working for me? But hey, we all have off days. There could be a very good reason. So
and
just
we've also
patience.
Got three disciplines that are coming together, so you won't always see a change in every single one of them every time.
And the good news is there'll be another park run time trial in the future sometime.
Too right.
Okay, before you stick something in the diary, let's move on to what we're talking about tonight.
All right.
Bits and bobs.
Yeah, I just wanted to touch on the equipment we use for both training and racing, what it is, and a bit of why behind it, because, so sometimes it's not always obvious.
Yep. And I think if we go in the order of the disciplines, let's start with the swim.
Yeah.
You know, we turn up at swim squad and we look at you and we wait for you to tell us what we need for this session.
Which is normally bring everything.
Bring everything.
All the toys.
Yeah, but everything then makes the end of the pool look like a swim shop. So one of the interesting things when I started with the squad was getting this snorkel.
Yeah, and it was something that I only brought into the squad, probably 2 or 3 years ago. And just see huge, huge benefits with it, because generally in swimming, if something is going to go wrong, it's when you turn your head to breathe. So if we can whack a snorkel on and spend a reasonable amount of time swimming without having to move the head, then we've got the chance to really balance and align and connect all the other things.
Yep. And I agree wholeheartedly because it's a center snorkel, which is, you know, you're not looking at fish on the Barrier Reef. It's in the middle, and what it does, you don't have to turn your head, so you get to see your hand entry and try and see what Gerard is telling you with regards to some of the angles and, you know, elbow above wrist and fingers below wrist and all those things. When you don't have to think about breathing, it's really handy.
Yeah, and look, there's some people who still really don't enjoy or struggle with the snorkel, but the majority of people do. If you give it the time and the patience, you get over that kind of initial, survival mechanism of not wanting to breathe underwater, then it's really, really good.
Yeah. I'm not so sure everyone loves it, Gerard. It is the piece of equipment most likely to be left behind after a session. Moving on to the second most likely thing to be left behind, fins. So another tool of the trade.
Yeah, so we don't use fins to actually develop our kicking. We use them in different ways to support our swimming. And again, if we've got a bit of propulsion from the feet for some drills, for some things we're doing, it means we can focus on the other bits of it. Because, look, triathletes are notoriously bad kickers, stiff ankles. You know all about that.
That'll be me.
Yep. So if we can just help you do some of those drills a bit better by putting a bit of propulsion on the feet, fantastic.
Yep.
And the biggest thing with fins is that you want really flexible ones. You can buy some relatively cheap ones, but they're almost kind of inflexible plastic.
Yep.
Through to some very expensive silicon, who knows what materials.
Yep.
But yeah, the more flexible you can find, the better.
Okay. And so the fins, as you say, not all about propulsion, almost just a little bit of extra propulsion so you can focus on some other things.
Yeah.
The pool boy.
Yes.
Another one of the main tools, again, designed to stop the legs and allow you to focus on sort of from the waist up.
Yeah, very much. There's a couple of angles to it that if you put a pool boy in, it's for most people, it's going to lift your body position a little bit in the water, which is actually closer to what it'll be like in the open water when you've got a wetsuit on. So it gets you a bit more into that position.
Yep.
It also generally gives you a bit more stability through the core. So instead of things being a bit separate and a bit wonky, kind of legs to arms, you can tighten all of that up and connect it together.
Yeah, I do remember reading it in a book once, and the pool boy in is about as close as I've ever got to the feel like you're swimming downhill.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because the hips and the, you know, the bum or whatever is almost higher than the shoulders or chest, and it does feel fantastic.
Yeah, and every now and again I'll say, okay, pretend you're swimming with the pool boy, because it's that kind of feeling that we want to eventually develop.
if only. Now to one of my least favourite.
Just with the pool boy, want to make sure if you haven't got one, you're getting one. Bigger people need bigger pool boys. Smaller people, smaller pool boys. It's probably obvious, but you see a bit of a mismatch every now and again, and it's just completely wrong for the person.
Yep, understood. I was about to tell you about my least favourite tool, the paddles,
yep.
For some reason. So paddles on the hands, you know, to me it's like, oh, so that's going to create more resistance and make it harder for me to stroke through the water and build massive shoulders. Am I wrong?
Bingo. paddles are the equivalent of running or riding hills. Okay, when you're going up a hill, your muscles work harder, and that's exactly what paddles do for you. The other benefit, though, is they're fantastic for technique work. Because when we put those on, I see just about everybody catches the water a bit better, and you can feel that connection because you've got this thing on your hand, whereas when you with just your hand in the water, sometimes things just slip a bit and you don't always feel it.
And I think with the way that you get us to hold them, which is very limited, you know, we're not completely shoved into it. There's just sort of one finger on it. Sometimes no fingers.
Yeah, that's right.
You're right. If you go into the water the wrong way, the paddle sometimes just disappears. So yeah, that does put in some concentration.
Yeah.
Anything else on the paddles?
Nope.
Okay. I may now have a new favourite, least favourite. The band.
Yeah, the
although I'm actually
torture
quite good
device.
With the band. Because I have no kick, so it makes no difference. So the band is a bit of old inner tube, or you can buy a proper band to round the ankles to, I guess, limit/completely rule out a kick.
Yeah, we want to tie up those ankles nice and tight together, but for a couple of reasons. It means that you don't have kind of a bit of a wobble going around at the back end with your legs, because if we don't get them nice and tight, then people will just naturally kind of kick and things. Then when you've got them tied up like that, it makes your legs sink a bit more. It actually creates a bit more drag. You've got to work harder to overcome that.
Yeah. And I often find I swim a bit faster because that helps me get everything up.
Yep.
Otherwise, you know, the toenails are almost scraping along the bottom of the pool.
Yeah.
But not quite that bad. But
And then once your legs are tied together and you are working a bit harder to overcome that resistance, hopefully you start using the core and the body to roll through things rather than just flapping arms and legs as separate pieces, again, connecting everything together.
If you mention core a few more times, we might start to believe that the core is important for swimming.
You might have heard that. Yeah.
So that's kind of that's the pool.
Mm.
We didn't mention goggles for the pool, but obviously you need goggles unless you're very adept at seeing in the chlorine-filled water. When you're out in the wild, wetsuit.
All right, wetsuit. So there are a gazillion brands of wetsuit out there now, and generally they're all pretty good.
Yep.
If you buy one of the big names, you know you're going to get a wetsuit, a good wetsuit. The difference becomes fits for different people, and they're even making them specifically now for people who have got sinkier legs or floatier legs, all of these different variations.
Very technical.
I know. Now, the problem is it's really difficult to go and try on too many different brands because so few shops carry a big range of different brands. So you really have to probably do a bit of research online, figure out what you need in a wetsuit, and then, ideally try one on or try on options in a shop.
Yeah.
If you're having to do mail order, then be prepared to send it back. Be prepared to make the call, no, that doesn't quite feel right, send it back, try something else.
And as we always say, ask around the squad if you're looking to buy a new one or your first one.
Yep.
Just ask what people have used, and there's every chance someone might even have a spare one that an old one that might do the job. Because they're not, even at the lower end, they're not the cheapest piece of kit.
Not at all. And two things I'd say about wetsuits is that one is that buy the best you can afford. That doesn't mean you have to buy the top of the range, the most expensive. But generally, very generally. The more you pay for a wetsuit, the better the flexibility you're going to get in the shoulders,
yep.
the better the design of it, everything else. But you still have to make sure it's suitable for you, because yep. there's no point if you have very, very sinky legs going and getting a wetsuit, which is very thin in the legs.
Yep.
You want to get make sure the buoyancy is in the right place for you.
And something you talked about, things, you know, we don't need everything. Mm. Something I do have is gloves as well, not for swimming, but for putting the wetsuit on.
Yeah.
I learned the hard way. You try to pull a wetsuit on, you know, around the arms or the legs, and you get a fingernail in there, yep. you take a nick out really easily, which, if you've paid whatever
several,
for a wetsuit,
several hundred.
Yep. It's a little frustrating. But so you can buy gloves that are wetsuit material, a lot thinner, but they stop your nails digging in. But
These wetsuits today are high performance things. Mm. So they are reasonably fragile because of that. You want to look after it.
Moving on, or we could be here all night. I mentioned goggles, but out in the open water, slightly different goggles required for...
Yeah, so the traditional pool swimmers that you used to see on TV in the Olympics and things, they had these tiny kind of almost monocle kind of things around their eyes.
Well, they almost disappeared into the socket. Yeah, they sit almost in the socket of the eye.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is okay if you're only going 50 metres or 100 metres.
And following a line on the bottom of the pool.
Yes.
But we want visibility. So there are open water specific goggles, which have got basically a bigger lens on them so that you can see more.
Yeah.
The other thing in the open water is that generally having tinted goggles is a good thing to do. It would have to be a pretty miserable day that you didn't want tinted goggles.
Yep.
A lot of the events, you're starting first thing in the morning, chances are at some point you're going to be swimming directly into the sun.
Yeah. And that sighting element is, you don't want to be swimming any further than you need to.
Yeah. Now, I used to moan about the price of goggles for these little things and how much they cost for good ones. But when you put it into perspective of what a bike costs or anything else, a good pair of goggles, they're so comfortable and they work so well in the open water, it's worth spending another $20 on a pair of goggles to get some good ones.
Understood. Okay, with our tinted goggles, we've got out of the water.
Our rose-tinted goggles.
Our rose-tinted, yeah. Rose-tinted, I've got a PB in the swim, unlikely. So the bike, you know, there's as I think you mentioned, a gazillion, but there's many, many things in relation to the bike.
Mm.
What's some of the gear that's a bit more important than others, and some of the stuff you can do in relation to the bike?
So the very first one is time trial bike versus road bike, and there's no correct answer here. It really comes down to your goals and your budget.
Yeah.
When I first started, it was probably about 50-50 time trial bikes versus road bikes. Now it's just about all TT bikes. So a lot of people front up at events and feel almost embarrassed having an ordinary bike, or feel like there's some pressure. They see everyone else in the squad seems to have a TT bike, so I really should buy one.
When I had clip-on aero bars, I wasn't embarrassed. I got someone else to rack my bike for me in amongst all the carbon and graphite and this, that, the next thing.
But yeah, it is really important to recognise the bike. Bikes are sold about the aerodynamics and how wonderful they are. But in the end, the rider is 80% of the aerodynamic drag on a bike.
Yep.
So the bike frame itself really isn't that important. Yes, there are benefits in TT bikes, and that's why people have them. But if you're not up to spending the money, please don't feel pressured at all.
Yep.
Get your road bike, whack on some aero bars. That is the number one thing that you have to do. And if you don't have them already, get them now.
Yep. And whatever you're riding, if you can, get a bike fit.
Yes. Yep. So true.
Yeah.
Because that's going to cover the aerodynamic side of it, your comfort, and making sure you are set up correctly.
Yeah. I think having an expert tell you, advise you, they probably do tell you the best position to be in and move the handlebars this bit, take the seat up, down, maybe move your cleats on your shoes. That, because comfort at our level is crucial.
Yeah.
When you're going to be out there for, you know, 2.5 to 3 hours on the bike and a half Ironman, you know, you don't want to be uncomfortable. So,
so true.
Bike fit is although you don't walk away with anything apart from advice, and then the changes to the bike, just money well spent.
And because if you do have a road bike and you're going to whack on some aero bars, that does change everything else on the bike.
Yeah. Yep.
I did that.
I used the one Ironman I've done where it was clip-on aero bars on my road bike.
Yep.
And they did make some changes to the seat and to my cleat position. So,
yeah.
Yeah. We've talked about some of the gadgets before. Power meter?
Yeah, we've talked about them quite a bit. Yeah. In this context, I really want to say that we've talked about how great they are in training. Race day execution, if you've done the work and you're using your power meter correctly, then you're going to have a power number or a level to achieve over the course of that ride.
Yeah.
And you can do that so easily. And that's actually one of the biggest wins I've seen in the last couple of years with power meters, people executing the bike leg better than they used to,
yeah,
which sets them up for a way better run.
Yeah. We won't say any more about the power meter. We sort of banged it to death, and you might think we're being sponsored by some... Oh, there's an idea.
We need to name some names and
take see some what cash. We can drum up. Trainers, indoor sessions. We've talked a little bit about that, but a trainer...
Yeah.
Because guess what? It's not always light winds and sunshine outside.
No.
And we don't always have the time to get out on the road.
Yeah, that's right. That's what we've talked about before, haven't we, Doug? That it's just so time efficient. You can come home from work, you can get on it early in the morning, you can just get in there, you can do some good hard work without having to figure out, okay, I need to ride through town, around the bays, there's corners, there's wind out there. Yep. You can just get on with it.
And you have the ability to control that environment and the effort required, yeah, rather than, oh, here's a hill, sorry, I was supposed to be doing 10 minutes easy.
Yeah.
Yeah, doesn't work. Okay, just jumping back to the bike, question, you know, if once you've got your bike, race tyres?
Yes.
Are they a...
Yep, totally.
I know they're a thing. Good investment?
So, yeah, definitely. So you might be, can't remember off the top of my head, $100 to $150 per tyre for race tyres, which might seem expensive, but they will go faster.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
See, we're talking about race tyres, not wheels. Just talking about the rubber.
So wheels are certainly the next level as well, but you can take your ordinary old wheels that you've got, whack tight new tyres on them, you'll go faster because of it.
Now, aero helmet.
Mm.
Yes, no.
Yep.
How good do you need to be to stick on an aero helmet?
So if you rate things value for money, I think we've talked about them before in a podcast actually, aero helmets stack up really, really well. You might be, I'm pulling numbers again, $400, $500 for an aero helmet.
Yeah.
But actually makes quite a significant difference to your aerodynamics.
Yeah, and there are some different options now. It doesn't have to be the massive teardrop thing that goes halfway down your back.
Yeah.
There's some other really good, almost triathlon specific.
Yep.
Just got a little bit of aero.
So look, we're getting into stuff now which involves spending extra money.
Yep.
It's not a necessity at all.
No.
Your good standard ordinary helmet, totally fine. But if you're looking for that next level, definitely aero helmet.
Now, we talked about race tyres. I mentioned race wheels.
Yeah.
You've said, yep, a good investment, but a bit further down the list of, it's not a must-have. If you've got the spare cash...
That's it.
It's a nice to have.
Yep. Yeah. And look, there's no doubt that they are faster again.
Yeah.
But do all of those other bits first is your cheaper, easier speed to get.
Yeah. So the race wheels, you know, you're going into the world of sort of deeper rims and different materials, so they're lighter.
That's it.
That kind of thing. Okay.
Better bearings. Yeah.
You need a bike.
Yeah. Yeah. But as we touched on, that is actually lower priority. You want to do all of these other things first because... So long as you don't have an absolute rusty old death trap, you're going to get around just as well on your ordinary old bike versus a flash new $10,000 bike.
Yep.
Okay. Yes. New bikes are faster. They feel amazing too.
And they look great.
New bike day. Oh. But if you haven't got the cash to spend, don't stress.
As long as you don't drop it on the ground on the first time you take it out, but we won't mention any names. Okay. So on to the third discipline, which requires... There's far less bits and bobs.
And this is why running is such a popular sport around the world.
So running, I don't know, you've got shoes, you've hopefully got some shorts and a top on, and what else? What was the one thing, and I was a bit surprised, that, you know, the speed people get through transition when I first was doing it, and then I realised they had these flexible, these bendy laces.
Yep. So for cost of, I don't know, $10, you can buy stretchy laces, whack them in your shoes, it makes your shoes faster to get on, and then you don't have to worry about laces coming undone during the run.
Yeah.
Real simple.
And I think we did the duathlon a couple of weeks back, and when you're running, got to take your shoes off.
Yeah.
Biking, then got to put them back on again.
Yep.
Just, well,
it's almost
twice
instant.
As often as you have to in a triathlon.
Yeah.
Really, really handy.
Yeah.
The bit of advice I would give is just test them a few times, because if you do the elastic up, you know, and have your little the nobule too tight,
yep,
you may at the top of your foot can sometimes go a little bit numb. So just make sure you've got that right.
Yep. Great call.
Rather than finding out when you're sort of 13 k's into a half marathon. And
one of the reasons we're talking about all of this stuff now is so you've got plenty of time to get it and test it.
Yep. Nothing new on race day, Coach.
Bingo. That's it.
Speaking of race day, you need if you don't want to pin it to your top, race belt.
Yeah. And most races these days, you've got a sticker that goes on your bike, so you don't need to wear a separate race number on the bike.
Yep.
That's just going to flap around, create a bit more drag. But they do say have it on the run. So a race belt is simply a piece of elastic. It's got your number attached to it. You come into transition, you throw it on as you're running out of transition, and then it's there for the run.
And it's one you can either have it unclipped and do it up, or I often see people, it's just done up and they almost just pull
step
it up.
Step into it.
Step into it and pull it up. And the most important thing about a race belt is it has your number on it, so that when you go to look for the photos of you in that event,
that's right,
you're referenced. So every now and then, just check that your number's nicely at the front.
Yeah.
If it's behind you, no one's going to know who you are when they stick it on that photo finishers website.
And you're never going to see those glorious poses you've had as you've been running around.
Exactly. There's nothing like looking athletic when you see a photographer in the distance. So that's sort of swim, bike, run. Other bits and pieces, because I know in my case, as a older athlete, we've done a bit of strength and conditioning.
Yep.
So the one thing was the band, the elastic, stretchy bands for some of the exercises.
Yeah, look, stretchy bands, Swiss balls, kettlebells. If you're doing strength and conditioning work, you can do so much work with these at home.
Yeah.
I know that's very quick touching on those, the strength and conditioning tends to be secondary for most people, but it's amazing how far just a little bit goes.
Yep. And I am not paid by you to turn up to these podcasts, but I've certainly felt the benefit. This is the first year that I've done any structured strength and conditioning and flexibility stuff. And touch wood, the body seems to be holding together a lot better than previous years. So,
look, I think, again, great idea, Doug. We should probably do another podcast looking a bit closer at that.
We'll never run out of ideas. and, of course, on the technology side, we've talked about it before. There's all sorts of things you can have, apps, and to make the experience that little bit less painful or more enjoyable or more reportable. If it's not on Garmin or Strava, it never happened. It can be a money pit.
Yes.
So I know we've gone here, there, and everywhere with some of the stuff. There are certain things that are must-haves.
Yeah.
Everything else is a could-have.
Yeah, that's right.
And not entirely necessary
to
really enjoy the sport.
Yep. We've talked before about the Garmin's, the data side of it, that you learn things from it, and that's really what it's about.
Yep.
So, please don't feel like you have to buy all of the technology and use it to its nth degree. That works for some people. Others, just figure out what you need to learn.
Yep. So you've pretty much summarised it, really. Think about the ROI. What do you get? What's the return for the race wheels or the aero helmet or the goggles for out in the ocean and that type of thing? So list the stuff down. And, if you've got any questions, I'm sure Gerard would be able to say, well, if it's between this and this, I'd spend my money on the first thing. And apart from some of the big items, most things are relatively low cost.
Yeah, they are. And you think about what it costs for a new bike, for your entry fees, the accommodation, everything you're spending on the sport, is don't skimp on a few other pieces that will actually make training and racing better for you, more successful, more enjoyable.
Yep. Like a lot of sports, you could just spend. Oh, but hopefully Gerard's given you an idea of some of the things, what's really needed, and as I'm repeating myself, you don't have to have all the gear, have the right gear that's right for you.
That's it, exactly. This is an individual sport. It's all about what we want to get out of it, so that's what you put into it.
Yeah. Superb.
Brilliant.
I never thought we could talk quite so long about bits and bobs.
Neither did I. Who would have knew it would be so fascinating?
Can't wait till next time.
All right, cheers, Doug.
Thank you.